Yeah, good morning. You're welcome to the Daily Digest with Jimmy Dissou. And today is the first of the week. And like I promised, I have my very good friend, Mr. Yemi Kande Johnson here, SCN. And we were going to talk about the Odili case. However, I'd like to make a few comments on some developments on this program for clarity. One is that the interview I had with Mr. Kule Uthman, the lawyer, I understand it's gone viral. It went so viral, I ended up getting some myself. Oh. And I got a phone call from a concerned party member of the APC and a former top government official this morning. And there were complaints that the interview was one-sided. And my immediate reaction is that the interview that has one guest cannot be one-sided. And that the opportunity is open. And it was the belief of that gentleman, and I think he must have spoken to his people, that Kule Uthman was unfair to the governor. Fair enough, he's entitled to that. And therefore, this is an open invitation for them, for the party, APC or government, to please let us get the name of somebody who'd love to come. Sit down for 1 hour and refute all the other things that Kule Uthman said. I think that is fair enough. So I'm making this public, so that in case other people do hear, there's a lot of politics in these things. I'm making it public now that if there's anybody who feels that, we would be glad, more than glad to. And he said something to the effect that, oh, no, your place is toxic. It appears as if you are biased. And I told him he is wrong. It doesn't appear as if I am biased. I am biased. I am biased because I am one of those who believe that justice must prevail, and whoever is responsible for this, somebody has to stand up for the people. And that's what I told the gentleman who called me. Even if you've been in government before and you've been well taken care of, there comes a time in a man's life when you have to stand up to the people, stand up to your conscience. What we are saying here is not a party matter. It's not us versus them. What we are saying here is that we are calling to question certain things that have happened. We voted this government into power. Okay, they campaigned for us. We voted. Some of us put our reputation on the line way back then. I remember it's on record that I had said that this government, and I believe that they can still succeed. So it's not an us versus them issue. It's not a fight. Okay, we just want to get to the bottom of it. One of the things that transpired was that, this thing probably happens in other places. And I said, thank God that you're admitting that the earlier you move in to correct these things, the better. But I don't want to waste Mr. Johnson's time. He's a very busy man. And I didn't bring him here to come and talk politics. But I just want one or two clear issues on legal matters. One, what are the rights of the families of those who were killed in this circumstance? Who can they hold responsible?
That's a very important question.
Yes.
When a building collapses, the inquiry will reveal that error and faults may have caused at various stages of its development.
And breaches.
Correct. The design, the structure, the construction, the supervision, the management. But the purpose of government in building is to uphold a certain code and regulation in construction industry. So the first thing that I would ask after asking why the building collapsed and how the mechanics can be attributed to various individuals who participated in the construction, I would ask who approved the building. If it proves that part of that construction process was defective, then those who supervised the buildings in Lagos, which is the Lagos State Government, are responsible on one level, but then there are multiple levels of responsibility. So if I claimed on behalf of a person who had perished in this building, I would want to look for the person with the deepest pocket. It's easy to go after the contractor, the owner of the building, the managers of the building, the architect, the structural engineer, the engineers involved, if you can find fault when you investigate the cause of the collapse. But ultimately, if there's fault and the fault is due to a failure of regulation, which is very often the case, then you need to look at the government. Of course, the government has immunities, etc. But then it becomes an issue of how does the government carry its responsibility?
Does the government have immunity, or does the governor have immunity?
No, when I say immunity, I mean there's a limit to to your recourse against a government agency. It's not the constitutional immunity which belongs to the governor in its personal capacity. If you want to sue a public body, you have to sue within a specific time. You have to, if they're carrying out their function, which is the exercise of legal power by a government authority, does not often attract liability. But if they've done so unlawfully, or they've done so in a reckless and incompetent manner, then it's possible on inquiry to determine that individuals within those institutions are personally liable. And that's what I would be looking for.
Kunle Uthman said that he believed that what we should have is a judicial probe, a judicial commission of inquiry to look into that, that because there's so many people that are liable, directly or indirectly. Indeed, he even did mention the governor then to say that, well, he gave the approvals. And
you know, this is a major disaster in which people have died.
Yes.
There's no doubt that Kunle Uthman is 100% correct when he says that this is a matter for a judicial inquiry or an inquest. First of all, if someone dies in an unusual or unexpected manner within a territory, and Lagos has a coroner's law, there should be an automatic trigger of a coroner's inquest. But the government which supervised this building, I mean, this building, as was pointed out recently, is not somewhere in the bush. It's in the center of prime Lagos real estate, on a road which I'm sure the governor and multiple superior government functionaries pass every day. And I heard someone say that many other buildings would require inquiry as to what is the status of their building. Now, this suggests a systematic failure of government regulation. And it's something which the government itself is not competent to investigate without the mechanism of an independent inquiry. So when the governor, whose conduct will be amongst the conduct to be inquired into, appoints a low-level inquiry of people who, I'm not questioning their individual capacity, but these are not people who have been chosen for their independence or impartiality. It seems to me like what is being arranged is a cozy little whitewash.
I like the word cozy.
Yes.
Okay. Now we're hearing stories also of, the owner of the building. We don't hear any other name. Could one man form a limited liability company?
No.
Uh-huh. I thought so.
At least two people.
Two people. Someone tried to go. I ignore that one. If it's a business enterprise, maybe, yes. But not. So who are the? We need to find out. That's where the press comes in. Who are the other partners?
Again, the responsibility for regulation requires the gathering and the archiving of certain information. Mm-hmm. It should be very simple for a competent and well-run building agency to tell you. They must know, before building approval is given, was there building approval? What was the approval given? Who applied for it? Who were the principal? Who was the architect? Who was the structural engineer? Who was the quantity surveyor? Who was the contractor? This is facts which
the governor
is an extremely powerful man, but officers far below his pay grade should be able to gather that information within an hour and be able to tell us. And also, to search who owns a company, I know that the gentleman who is described as the promoter of the company has become the focal point, and may his soul rest in peace. It's very easy to be maligned when you're not alive, and it's very easy to be a fall guy. So I would be very cautious about demonizing an individual who has perished without a proper inquiry. The fact is that he has paid a terrible price for whatever went wrong in that building. But there are others who are alive who are complicit in any failure that went on there. And more importantly is the fact that the reason why we insist on enforcing law is to create a safe environment. If that happened in this one building, then who knows how many buildings across Lagos are similarly subject of corrupt and incompetent regulation, and that there may well be a present risk to other lives even as we speak.
Yes.
Now, this is the more important public interest. And this is why the government itself should be anxious to demonstrate beyond doubt that they recognize there's a problem and they have taken steps to be certain that this cannot happen again. What I expect the governor to say is that this is a terrible tragedy. We're going to look into it in an independent and impartial way. We're going to make our findings public, and we're going to make sure, because I'm responsible for the safety of the people of Lagos, that such a tragedy does not occur again.
Would that happen if he feels that he might be indicted?
Well, obviously, self-preservation is the most natural human instinct, and also in politics. But people have to take responsibility. And part of the obligation of leadership is to accept responsibility for failure. The buck must stop somewhere. And if the governor is culpable, I expect him to be man enough to take that responsibility. I mean, this whole, you started off by talking about people inquiring into why you would host an interview and ask, have a member of the public, an educated, enlightened, and interested member of the public, give an interview as to what had gone on. The story that you related to me just sounds like some crybaby, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, my opinion is that if you have a contrary opinion, you should man up, unmask yourself, and answer to the public for it. That is the responsibility of a political leader.
That's what I told him. But he said that you're too toxic, that because I appear to be biased. And I said, no, I'm not. I don't appear to be biased. I am. If what you think I feel is biased,
yes,
then I am biased, you know. But like you said, you use one word, just one word, man enough.
Yes, yes.
I believe that if a lot of our leaders had been man enough,
yes,
we wouldn't be in this mess. And if they won't be man enough and we let this one blow away,
yes,
everybody listening to me should remember that at one time or the other, you might have to go into a public building. It might not even be residential.
Correct. Correct. If there's a problem, it
you could
been
just
solved,
go and do stamp duty. It could be a high court. It could be anything.
We're all at persistent risk. And a political leader should not be craven, whinging, and hiding behind the shadows to defend himself. A political leader should recognize he's answerable to the people. And that he should stand up. And that is the expression, to man up. I mean, I'm glad you haven't identified with this individual.
No, I won't.
I might have called him a wimp.
No, I won't. Let's get down to what we... Okay. Our lines are going to be open at some point, 0700-993-993-993. We were here to talk about the Ibori case, not merely... about the, Odili issue and that of the eternal injunction. Now, put it in proper perspective. What is the injunction that this former governor has? We're talking about Odili, former governor of Rivers State.
Yes. You know, this is a matter that is discussed in a pedestrian way on many platforms. Odili got a perpetual injunction, they say. And the EFCC has used that specter of this Odili injunction as a cover for their incapacity to be effective in other areas. They haven't been able to prosecute Odili, they say, because he got this injunction. I think that it's a red herring. And of course, an injunction is an order of a court preventing individuals from carrying out certain acts. I think that Peter Odili did not obtain a perpetual injunction against his being prosecuted. And I think that it's unfair to him to say that he did. I think that what happened in that case is that the EFCC produced a dossier which was effectively a collection of facts and circumstances which they said amounted to crimes against Peter Odili while he was governor and at a time when he was about to run for the presidency of Nigeria. The Attorney General of Rivers State brought an action in the court saying that they could not prosecute him on this material, and in any event, there are constitutional issues as to whether the EFCC should prosecute for offences which occurred within individual states, which is one issue. But what the court had before it at that time was a dossier which, by all accounts, was shoddy, poorly prepared, and incapable of sustaining a proper criminal charge against Peter Odili. Now, he obtained an order saying on that report he could not be prosecuted, and challenging them effectively to prosecute. You know, for me, when very often the criminal law and criminal procedure, because it's not regulated by order and rules and codes, that to decide whether you prosecute an individual, there should be two tests. The first, is there sufficient evidence to sustain the charge which I intend to bring? The second should be, what is the public interest in this prosecution? Not every public prosecution serves the public interest, but it's for officers to decide. And in many other, the Crown Prosecution Service, the U.S. Department of Justice, they have a manual for prosecutors which will tell you how they will approach a set of facts which may amount to a crime. They will decide whether those facts have been proven, they can be sustained, they will decide what crime they amount to, and they will decide how to prosecute, what's the most effective means, whether there should be a plea bargain, whether they should be prosecuted to vindicate the public interest in public prosecution or not. So that is a process which I do not believe Nigerian prosecutions go through. Across the board, Nigerian prosecutions, it seems, are launched without proper foundation, as a tool of extortion, as a tool of political intimidation. And this happens even with the EFCC. Very few lawyers would contest the fact that EFCC prosecutions are very often tools of extortion, either political or financial. And so when that situation arises and someone then says to you, you say there's a crime against me, I want to be charged tomorrow because I want to defend myself. That is always a problem for the prosecution authority. You see, if you look at the Department of Justice in America, they want to charge somebody. The attorney general or district attorney will stand before the press and say, today we're bringing 32 counts against Mr. Jimmy Disu. We charged Jimmy Disu over 3 years, operates a course of conduct by which he introduced money into this. They will set out the facts. We hold the view that these constitute offenses under federal statute, so. When they present the dossier to you, you will know they've done the work and that it is very difficult for you to escape this charge. They don't file charges like they do in Nigeria. They file 300 irrelevant charges, bring you to court, so they can take you back to the cell and negotiate their profits. And it's something that nobody should be afraid to say. Public prosecution in Nigeria very often is not launched to vindicate the public interest. It is launched very often for bad motives, and mostly those motives are financial. So this is a problem. So in the case of Odili, it seems to me that they were unable to sustain the charge against him on the document they presented. Too lazy and incompetent to raise a charge. So as far as I'm concerned, Odili has no case to answer. Because if you have a case to answer, it's the job of the prosecutor to gather the facts, to analyze them, to process them, to put them in a form that they can be presented effectively to a court, and to determine that the public interest is served by pursuing the prosecution. There again, this crybaby attitude that Odili has tied her hands. If you have evidence against Odili, they should charge him to court.
And they haven't done that for close to only God knows how many years.
There you go. So as far as I'm concerned,
because
it's a failure.
I heard somewhere that the EFCC even said that they wanted to challenge that that court's order. They wanted to challenge it in court. It's taken them about 18 years.
Well, I assume that EFCC has lawyers with a basic degree of competence. And
you assume, or do you know?
I don't know this for a fact. But if they did, then they would know that they should, if you have an objection with an appeal, and all the time since Peter Odili left office, they could have gone to the Court of Appeal.
Quickly, is there a timeline between when he can be prosecuted?
No, time doesn't run against the state in criminal cases. So if you have evidence,
bring it forward. Right, we're going to take a short break now, and when we do come back, the number is 0700-993-993-993, and the female number is 01465. I call it the female number, but number that the woman can call, woman only, 01465-7190. It's the Daily Digest with Jimmy Disu. We'll take a very short break. I have Candy Johnson, SAN, here, and then we'll be right back. In the house. I'll take some calls now and then we'll go on with our discussion. Hello, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Yes, sir, Musba, how are you?
Yeah, good morning, sir. Good morning, Vice Sir.
Good morning.
Yeah, you have Ambassador Musba here from Michigan.
It's a pleasure.
I listened to Uncle Jimmy this morning with Renewo. He said there are a lot of madness. Yes, I agree with you. There are a lot of madness, especially in this my country, beloved country, Nigeria. But, Vice, I want to ask you two questions. I want you to listen to me very well so I can get the correct answer.
Okay.
If someone commits an offense and the offense doesn't die, is that the end of the trial? Can the trial continue?
Second one.
He has dead.
So I didn't hear
second. Is,
I'll tell you.
Is that we don't value names anymore. Like Peter Dilley, the governor. Is it not enough for the wife to resign because of this name? Oh, my husband committed this offense.
No, he hasn't committed finally, an offense. He has not been found.
Finally, I know. If he finally find out this man, the governor, he committed this offense.
Okay, all right.
Is it not enough?
Okay, Mr.
Well, Madam.
Okay, before you get us into trouble here. but the first is what he said, and I think he's referring to the issue of this building and the gentleman who lost his life. God bless his soul. And that says that, is that the end of the case? Some of the victims' families, for example, have heard about Rolls Royce cars, Bentleys, the family kicking the wife out. That's a personal problem. But I'm sure they'll be interested in knowing, and I think we said something close to that hat, who can they hold responsible if they do want some compensation? Should there be, can anybody move for a quarter down all his assets and so on and so forth? That's the kind of thing he was thinking of. The second is with Odili, which even I can answer. Odili has not been found guilty of any, so I don't know if there's any reason for his wife to want to resign. For all you care, the taking him to court could be also, like you rightly said, an act of mischief, no matter what some of us think.
Yes, on the Odili case, that's your answer is simple and complete.
I'm becoming a son myself.
I've told you we should make you the next attorney general. Yes, but as to liability, again, yes. You know, we talk about one person whose life has been lost. I don't know sufficient of the facts to lay blame, but the fact is that a building collapsed. When a building collapses, it is an indication of structural failure. That structural failure can be the cause, can be the responsibility of a whole chain of people. But if a man dies and he has personal liability, that liability will attach to his estate.
To his estate.
Exactly.
Okay, now let's flip it around. What if he had, what if he wasn't dead? What if he didn't die and he was alive, hale and hearty? What would have happened?
Well, if he's personally responsible, then there will be criminal liability. I mean, when you're talking about the loss of individuals and their families, then you're talking about financial compensation. This is something that can be pursued against assets which belong to a person, whether he's alive or dead.
But even though he was the face of the company, the company is a limited liability.
Correct.
Would the other directors be liable?
Well, the purpose of the whole idea of limited liability is that you limit the liability to the shareholding. So, as far as the directors are concerned, there are aspects of corporate law which can hold directors personally liable for criminal acts of the company and for certain type of malfeasance that may be committed. But limited liability, prima facie, is to protect the liability of those who are participants in the company.
So probably the advice to people is that you better be careful. Sometimes you have situations where someone says, please, I need you to come be a director of my company.
No, this is a complete no-no. The fact is that in the last 10, 20 years, at least since the Enron case, there's been a worldwide push to make directors liable for the acts of companies.
So you better know what you're getting into.
Absolutely. Anyone joins a company as a director is exposed to potential criminal liability as well as civil liability if actions that they take can be termed as malfeasance.
What about if you're an executive director?
Even worse. Executive director
is
a directing mind of the company and so therefore actually did things. But non-executive directors also, you cannot go to a board and approve something and say you didn't read the papers.
Yes.
You can't go to a board and say you didn't know what was going on.
Or you voted against it and you didn't resign.
Precisely, because you are responsible. Because the public, when they put your name on the letterhead of paper, they're telling the public that this person's character and integrity is a guarantee of the performance of the company.
Well, that's a good lesson to learn.
Yes.
And I think it would also apply to like trustees and stuff like that.
Of course.
Yeah.
You cannot accept, it's not an honorific. The position of trustee is an extremely important one in the law. It's one for which you have responsibility to those who are the beneficiaries of the trust and also to the public and anybody who is dealing and interfacing with the trust. Same thing with limited liability company. Why do people have chief this and chief that? And some people think that joining a company is, if someone asks you to join a company, they're placing a responsibility on you because you're accountable to the public and to the law for your performance in that office, which is also an office of trust.
So you better be careful.
Absolutely.
All right, let's take another caller. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Yes.
This is Pastor Ladipo calling from Orilegum.
Yes.
Uncle Jimmy, my take this morning concerning this orderly case, like the lawyer has said, is it not possible? I want to ask you, is it not possible for EFCC to reorganize themselves and do the needful and go back to the courts? Is it not possible?
Are you talking about fresh charges?
Now. Thank you.
Okay, I think he's also talking about fresh charges. If we can.
Sure. Look, you know, as I've said, it's a matter of competence. The EFCC is a prosecuting authority. It has a responsibility to prosecute crime, to make an example of people if they can make a case. If they can't make a case, then there's no point crying about it. So if they could make a case against Peter Odili, then they should make a case. And I'm sure that a man like that would insist on defending himself at the earliest possible time.
Yes.
Very often when a prosecuting authority is motivated by bad faith or by motives which are not entirely in consistent with the law, they are unable to press a prosecution. And EFCC has tremendous resources at its disposal, investigative, financial. In my opinion, if they could make a case against Peter Odili, they would have done so. That they have not done so in all these years suggests to me that they cannot make a case against him.
So probably it's best to just leave the man alone.
I would have thought so. And move on to something else. Catch the fish that you can fry.
But sometimes the fish that you can fry looks very delicious at a distance.
Well, you have to know. Yes. You have to
Hello,
know.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Morning, sir. Who's calling?
Yes, my name is Thomas. I'm calling from Ibafo.
Yes, Mr. Thomas. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Kenneth Johnson.
Good morning, sir.
Just for the record, sir, by the new Company and Allied Matters Act, a small company can be registered by a single director. I'm into that. That's one of my services. I just registered one on Friday. Just for small companies.
You're right.
Just for information purposes.
Yes.
Okay. Now, what is your definition of a small company?
It's stated in the law, actually, the 2020 companies law. And I'm not sure what is stated. But it's some less than 10 million or something like that.
Now,
a small company can't build a 21-story building.
Well, but sometimes a small company could get severance and then take on.
Sure. It's meant to make it easy, because previously such a one person could only incorporate a company, could only do business under a business name. But he's right. The law was changed in 2020 to allow small companies.
But there's a limit.
Yes.
Now, the regulatory bodies, is that some of the things they'll be looking at to say that, look, you've brought this project for approval according to what the company you registered, your share paid up capital is 10 million.
Yes.
Is there a limit on
what? Of course, financial capacity is a measure of the responsibilities you bring to a project and your capacity to carry it out. So if you bring a company that is worth 5 million naira and you say it's going to build a $20 million project, that ought to set alarm bells ringing. Where do you get insurance from? Which bank is going to guarantee your loan of 5 million if your share capital and therefore the liability of your shareholders is so limited to a small capital base? So these are questions that would be asked. The capacity, and these are things you would investigate. For example, if you want a business permit in Nigeria to employ expatriates, the law will not, the regulator will not allow you to have a company that's 10 million naira share capital. At the time, it used to be 20 million. I'm not sure what exactly the figure is now. Yes, but the fact is that why are you doing a business that requires you to bring a foreigner if your share capital is 5 million?
One of the things we discovered, I'm glad we have two topics that are intertwining. One of the things we discovered in the papers this morning, Bemimo and I, is that building that went down was not insured.
Yes.
How could you have gotten approval without insurance? Is that possible?
To grant building approval without proof of insurance is not only unlawful, it's criminally negligent.
Wow.
And anybody who would allow that indicates, it suggests to me that they did not inquire to any degree of skill into the development.
So when you say it's criminal, what does that then mean?
Well, you know,
can criminal proceedings be instituted against such a person?
Absolutely, because if the law says to grant building permit, you need the following requirements. You need to have a bank guarantee. You need to have insurance of the building. And you haven't done so. First of all, there will be penalties within the law for the person who has failed to do so. But if that situation remains sustained for a degree of time, during which it should have come to the attention of the regulators, then it is quite possible that somebody within the system of regulation is complicit in that crime. This is if. I don't know.
Yes, if yes. We're not sure. Because the news was definite, but we still like to wait. Do you think this would be a proper time for government to quickly answer these questions in the public?
Obviously. I mean, if you look at a more developed...
I mean, it was more of a suggestion than a question.
If you look at a more developed political environment,
yes,
you will see that immediately a disaster or an event occurs, leaders of government, those responsible, get their story together and they move to engage with the public on the narrative.
With full information.
Exactly. They will say, there will be no cover-up. We'll tell you what has gone on. If a mistake has been made in my government, I will take responsibility for it. Whoever made the mistake is going to pay for it. Heads will roll. This is how you establish confidence in the system of government. If the people think that when government makes a mistake, which is very often caused by corruption within the government, they're going to circle the wagons and obscure the truth from the public, then people continue to lose confidence in government. And this is why people think that everybody in government is a liar and a thief. Mm. It's not necessarily true, but you can see how that idea will be allowed to prevail.
Mm. Okay. Let's take another. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Morning.
Yeah. Good morning, Lenese.
Good morning.
My name is Mark Harry. I'm calling from Ikoyi.
Yes.
I also say that when I listened to Mr. Othman the last time and listening to Mr. Johnson this morning, I have this feeling that there is still hope for the Nigerian judiciary. In fact, I believe that there is still something to look up to in the Nigerian judiciary. Unfortunately, I feel the direct opposite when I listen to Attorney General Malami. So I don't know what can be done to save the judiciary from such public officers.
Well, there's a simple answer. Appoint a competent Attorney General. Oh. Isn't that right? That's not to say if this one, current one, is competent or not. Mm. I'd rather not get into the politics of that because I'm not a lawyer. I mean, so I don't know. You like to take that one on or you'll pass.
Oh, no. I mean, he's qualified to be appointed, and the president has made a choice that these are the shoulders upon which he wishes to build.
When he says qualified, you don't need a degree in law.
He has a degree in law, I believe.
And you believe, or you're sure?
Oh, I haven't seen his credentials, but I don't think he could have been called to the bar without a degree in law, and I don't believe that he could have been made a senior advocate of Nigeria without having practiced as a lawyer for 10 years.
Mm. That system hasn't been compromised yet, has it?
I used to be on the Privileges Committee myself.
Okay.
Until 2011, I think it was.
Mm.
And I have some idea as to the efforts we made to immunize the process of appointment and selection of senior advocates of Nigeria. And they were extensive. At the time that we intervened, the English had improved their own system. They suspended the award of the rank for 4 or 5 years so they could decide how to create a merit-based system.
Mm.
And we tried to institute that in Nigeria. But any system depends on who administers the system.
Yeah.
And so I can say that when I was part of the Privileges Committee, we made every effort to be sure.
Now that you're no longer part of the Privileges Committee.
I can't say.
You can't say. Okay, we just have about less than 10 minutes more, so I'll take just one or two more questions. Hello, good morning.
Uncle Jimmy, good morning, sir.
Morning, who's calling?
The Lord, good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Uncle Jimmy, this is Chris.
Ah, Chris, how are you?
Thank you, sir. Barry, sir.
Yes, sir.
The Lord, you just give Malami a soft landing there. You know, it's your learned colleague. So I don't blame you, my brother. But Uncle Jimmy, when the Barry, sir, was talking, the law.
Yes.
Come and see how happy I am. Like I'm eating my pounded yam with white pepper soup.
This early in the morning.
I'm
Chris.
Telling you, the way it's sounding, you hear the voice, the way he's putting it, look at all the leakages. They don't have lawyer in MPC there. MPC, what is that department?
We know.
Good, you know.
Yes.
They don't have lawyer there then. Look at what the explanation the son is giving the law. If I'm the president, Jimmy, I told you, you always prefer solution, but they don't listen. If I'm the president today, I will look out for this.
Okay.
Come and help me.
Thank you. The truth is like everything in our national whatever is being riddled with politics, self-interest, corruption. I'm sure they have enough lawyers within the EFCC who would have known what to do. I mean, there was a time Festus Keyamo was in the year. He's now in the government. But so I'm sure they know what to do.
Yes.
But it's been riddled like all things.
Politics first, and very often personal profit first before public duty.
Mm, mm, mm. Okay. Do you have anybody on the female line? Hello, morning.
Hello.
Morning.
Good morning, Uncle Jimmy.
Yes, ma'am.
First time caller.
Yes, ma'am.
I want to talk about the building collapse.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. See, there are so many reasons why buildings collapse. Like, my husband is a building engineer. Yeah, he almost had a building collapse on him. But we thank God that for salvaging the situation.
Mm.
You know, he was putting up a three-story building. You know, for an Igbo guy that think he has money. Mm. He was rushing that building. My husband kept on saying, we don't build like this. Stop rushing us. Stop rushing us. We don't build like this. Concrete has to gain a maximum strength before you can, you know, before you can keep on building. You know, after they have struggled through that one and finished the building, he wanted to put his tuck-away pit. And he came close to the narrow part of the house, you know. You know, I wanted to put the tuck-away pit there. My husband said, don't put this tuck-away pit there. It's too close to the house.
Anyway, the long and short of it, did your husband walk away from him?
No, wait now, let me...
I have to move on. I have just a minute.
My husband didn't walk away because my husband had his way.
Fine. Thank you very much. That's what's most important.
Well, every professional is responsible for the work that they put their name to.
Yes.
And secondly, every building regulator appointed by the government has a duty to the law and to the public to be sure that the regulations, the building code, national building code, that it is enforced on every building that is being constructed within that territory.
Right. We got to go. Before we leave, I'd like again to repeat... For some people who are listening, let's repeat an open invitation to any member of the APC or whatever who want to react to what Kunle Uthman has said. You're more than welcome. You know, we'll give you the full time we give him. You're more than welcome. And please, when you listen to these interviews or you listen to interviews on air, they are not debates. Debate is something between two people. So if somebody makes comments on air that you feel uncomfortable with, you can't call in, whatever, contact the producer, and say, look, I have a contrary view, and I'm sure in the spirit of fairness, he will give you an opportunity to express yourself. And that's what we expect also in this particular case. Running around and accusing people of bias is not going to work because the facts are there. Human lives have been lost in this enterprise. And like myself and Mr. Johnson said, you don't know, you got to be sure before you walk into that. Like, okay, so you live in a bungalow, but you might need to go do some stamp duty somewhere. Oh. Anyway, and don't forget, this attitude doesn't end with high-rise buildings. Oh. It could be one-story building that could come down on you.
Correct.
And therefore, you need that confidence. Oh. It could be anywhere. Oh. In all honesty, it could be anywhere. And I must say, somewhere in my inner recess, somewhere at the back of my mind, let me confess something. I never knew this kind of thing would happen in a highbrow area like Ikoyi on the, you know, any of these buildings. I would never have thought that somebody would go from 15 to 21.
It's a wake-up call.
Make nothing say it not concern you. If you go walk the anchor, you go visit your brother who is a security guard there, and so on and so forth. It's a wake-up call. So all of us need to get involved in this. And when we talk about indicting those who should be indicted, the reason is very clear, Mr. Johnson. The reason is just because we believe very strongly that when you apply sanctions where they should be applied, it will serve as a deterrent. People make I hear people laugh when they say that in London it's not done like this. No, because you know whatever it is,
there'll be consequences.
If they knew there'd be no consequences, you'd be surprised at what you'd get.
Absolutely,
you'd be surprised.
Absolutely,
You'd be surprised.
Impunity is the
best. I can imagine if all the traffic lights went out and cameras went out in the UK for just 1 hour, the bedlam you would have.
And the minister would resign.
And
the head of the head of civil engineering would have to.
We don't resign here. Yeah. We make excuses. Thank you very much, Mr. Kandi.
It's my pleasure always. Thank you.
We'll be back again tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Tomorrow, of course, is Dear Bumi, and we have Mrs. Funke Kuyoro, who just turned 60. You know, women don't like that, but this one was gone. We went and ate and ate and drank and drank. She turned 60, and therefore, it's a kind of little tribute to her. And, of course, then we'll have her on. Do you listen to Dear Bumi, but you don't have the time?
I haven't. I will look for it.
No, don't look for it. Go and end the money.
Okay.
Go and end the money. I don't want your wife to come after me. Go and end the money. Wemimo, thank you very much for being here. You'll be here tomorrow doing Dear Bumi, won't you? Yes, okay. So that's what we're going to do. The Techers will be here any minute from now. Any minute from now, Techer 2, Techer 1 will be coming in. So take care of yourself. Enjoy your day. And see you tomorrow. Tomorrow is a brand new day on Daily Digest. Look out for that announcement when I come on air. See you tomorrow. Bye.
Nigeria Info. We are more than just radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Nigeria Info FM. Check us out on Facebook at Nigeria Info 99.3. Follow us on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM and on Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos for live updates as it happens. 99.3 Nigeria Info.